Tanya Batt, welcome to Waiheke Radio. Thank you so much for giving up some of your Saturday morning. I did introduce Tanya earlier. I hope she wasn't listening as a one-woman storytelling extravaganza. But there's so much more to Tanya Batt than just the storytelling we see and know and love in our Waiheke community. But we have her in the studio this morning for a particular reason, and that is that Tanya is just about to launch another children's book. Well done. Congratulations.
Oh, kia ora. Thank you, Greg.
Tell us a little bit about this. This book is called The Time of Your Life, and it's a philosophical treatise of the notion of time based on a concept by Einstein. Am I right?
Well, certainly I do draw on some of Einstein's thinking. You know, time is a very interesting concept to try and get your head around. And of course, we all think we have all the time in the world to do that, but actually time is limited, as is this morning.
Yes, it is indeed. Tanya has had to pop out of a Auckland Council workshop. Gosh, that sounds fun. I'm so sorry you had to leave the workshop to come and talk to us on Waiheke Radio.
Oh, any excuse, you know. Anyway.
But anyway, I'm sure it's an important workshop, but it's what sort of workshop are you doing this morning?
Well, actually, quite interestingly, it's an arts workshop.
Nice.
It's about kind of talking about arts in the community, so yeah, this kind of, you
perfect
know, is a nice
so they'll let you out
segue.
10 minutes,
that's
yeah
right.
So, oh, time, 10 minutes.
Time.
But this book is about a little boy. this is about a little boy who's just got two little wishes in life. One is that he was a bit taller. We all felt like that. At how old is he? 9, 10? Doesn't have to have an age, does he?
Well, yeah, but it's kind of an interesting idea about when children first become cognizant of the notion of time, because it's like we said, it's an interesting concept, time. What exactly is time?
Yeah, in fact, academics and a colleague of mine are in fact trying to re-understand time.
Yeah, and it's actually often a very cultural specific notion,
yes,
about
indeed
how time works as well.
Indeed.
And I guess we'd be safely to say that in the West we have this very linear concept of time, that we kind of are born, then life unfolds in some sort of meandering line, and then ta-da, the end. Kind of is a bit of a full stop, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, but anyway, back to Ben. Ben is the young boy in the book.
And Ben wishes he was a bit taller and had a bit more time.
He does, because I think all children can understand this, that actually there's never the time in life to do the things that you
get your shoes
want
on, do your hair, brush your teeth, we're late for school.
That's right. And that's a frustration maybe even we continue to feel as an adult, you know, that there's this, sometimes we're kind of in a struggle with time, aren't we?
Yes. Quite regularly,
yes,
actually. Yes.
So he gets a watch one day, and you know, you do wonder these days. For me as a child, getting a watch was a significant milestone.
Indeed, I remember my first watch.
I don't know how many children these days actually get watches, because actually most people use their phones now as time devices, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, which often end up being a big waste of time, don't they?
Yeah, they do. big time waster.
A big time waster.
Yeah.
But so I certainly remember, so I guess that was sort of around 7 or 8 that children start learning to read time and develop concepts around what time is.
Yeah.
So I guess Ben's around about that age, and he's kind of quite euphoric at the receiving this gift, because he suddenly feels like he's going to have some control of time. He's going to have time of his own. And I guess this is what we do, and we create these devices to measure time, and we feel like somehow we've now become the time lords, don't we?
Yeah. Absolutely. And he goes on to discover in philosophical ways that time's not that simple.
That's right. He kind of, he times himself. His mother's asked him to meet him after school with the lure that they might be able to go to the park before the shopping's done, you know.
Yeah.
And he times himself to walk down to the meeting place, and it takes 5 minutes. And he kind of reads this as sort of, that he's going to have a 5-minute credit. And later on at the park, when his mum's, you know, the usual kind of growing up thing, you know, you can have 5 minutes to play with your friends and we need to go. He's like, yeah, but I got this other 5 minutes that I've actually saved us.
Yeah.
So 5 and 5 are 10. And tries to negotiate, and that's when he finds out that he and his mother have quite a different concept of time. But he wrongly or interestingly attributes this loss of time to a fault in his new watch.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when he returns to his home, he finds that the box that the watch came in is the property, or was created by a group called Kronos and Kairos. And Kronos and Kairos are from Greek mythology.
Indeed.
And they were gods of two different types of time. So he finds himself transported to the premises of Kronos and Kairos, which now operates as some kind of watch manufacturer, and an old man there. And
old man time.
That's right, old man time, that's right. So it's interesting the different personifications.
Never
we have
old woman time.
No.
Women are too busy to assume these sort of slightly useless roles.
Well, that's a really interesting idea, isn't it, around the masculine and feminine aspects
Absolutely.
Of domains. And, of course, the feminine does come in at the very end of the story.
I interrupted.
Greg, Keep going. Greg hasn't read the story. He doesn't know the, he doesn't know the punchline.
No, I had...
Yeah, but, you know, in having this conversation with this old man about, you know, the faulty watch, the old man takes him into a Kronos, I should say, a Kronos room, which is the kind of mechanical measurement of time.
Yeah, so chronological.
Chronological time. That's so interesting. You know, I'm listening to Stephen Fry read his Mythos at the moment, if you come across it.
Yeah.
So fascinating in terms of the history of our language. I just love it. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh my goodness.
That's
know,
where that came from.
Our whole language is just one big muddle of stories, isn't it? Yeah.
And borrowings.
And borrowings. Yeah, they're like little footprints.
English borrows more than any other language in the world.
It's a wonderful thing because actually it's...
Well, it's sort of theft.
It's
ask people in Te Reo Māori who speak Te Reo Māori, you know, 50 years ago it was frowned on. Now we all own it.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, let's not go there.
That's right. That's a whole other conversation, another story.
Got it.
Yeah. So each of these experiences, he then goes into the room of Kairos, which is quite a different type of time. It's more of an intuitive time, you know, the time that we have to be with friends, the time to sing, the time to dance, you know, a time to settle down. You know, it's not like time to settle down is at 10:04
a.m. Sounds like a Bob Dylan song.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah. There's lots of time songs because this is a thing that, you know, it's a quandary for humans, isn't it?
Yeah.
And each of these experiences gives rise to questions like, what is time? How much time do we have, you know? And I guess...
And can time run out?
Yeah, that's right. And what's a good use of your time? You know, all these statements that we make that actually...
So value-laden, aren't they?
They are. But to some extent, they're queries that kind of haunt us really as humans, as sort of... They're kind of invisible questions that are always sitting there at the bottom of the conversation, aren't they? You know, how much time do any of us have? Mm. And what are we doing with our time? And are we doing what we really want to do with our time?
And when do we have to be back at the council workshop?
That's right. When do we have to be back at the council workshop? Because we don't want to miss the lunch.
Oh, yes. The free lunch.
That's right.
Excellent.
But
time and stomach.
Time
connected.
And stomach. That's right. And, you know, again, you know, we have... we have meal times, but then we also have our own intuitive hunger, don't we? So it's, you know, the opportunities for discussing time are endless. So in the end, the old man time addresses Ben's concern around the watch and presents with him some other options, an older watch whose hands run backwards, who looks at past time, and a futuristic watch that shows things not yet haven't yet passed.
I could do with one of those.
Yeah, that's right. Things to come. we already...
Just before the lotto numbers.
Yeah.
No, you see, this is what we can't do, can we?
Yeah, that's right.
We can't make time work for just us and nobody else.
No, this is right. And there's all kinds of, you know... All of those sorts of questions are kind of really well demonstrated, aren't they? Thinking back to Greek myth that, you know, every great gift comes with this huge repercussion or kind of boon or consequence, you know, so it's always sort of like, So in the end...
So many cultures have that consequence notion, don't they? From yin and yang to karma to utu to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, just cultures in the moment.
Well, that's kind of like, you know, it's a scientific law, isn't it, that... What is it that every action has a reaction? So every action has a consequence.
Every time spent has some time saved. All right, keep going.
So in the end, Ben's presented with this final watch, which doesn't have any numbers, and it just has a single word that's repeated around the clock face, which is the word now. And
So at every 5 minutes it says now.
That's right. Now.
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 And Ben queries it and says, now?
Yeah.
And
what about tomorrow?
Yeah. And the old man says, well, actually, the only time you actually really have is now.
It's now. Actually, I did know the punchline.
Yeah, yeah. But that's no, it's not the punchline.
Oh, that's not the punchline.
No, well, that's kind of just one of the kind of investigations, you know. And, you know, Ben's a little concerned because this new Now watch looks a considerable upgrade on his existing watch, and he's a bit worried he's come cashless. And the old man says, well, no, of course, it's a gift. That's why we call it the present. Yeah, so that's a borrowed one from our kind of cultural pool as
that's
well.
That's nice, though, isn't it? I really like that one.
It is a really, you know, some of those things we think are so cliche, but they're so cliche because they're so true.
They're so meaningful.
That's right, but, you know, a little bit overused. So the old man says to Ben, so what is the time? And Ben looks dutifully at his new flash watch and says, well, it's now. And the old man says, well, I thought as much, and now it's time for you to head home. And as Ben's leaving, he kind of turns to the old man and says, well, you know, I just got one question. He says, you know, you seem to have so much time, you know, you're old man time, you've got rooms full of different types of time. He said, have you got time to make me a little bit taller? And you asked about the feminine, and old man time says, I can't help you there. For that, you're going to have to talk to Mother Nature.
Lovely.
So thank
you for telling us the story. That's great. I mean, it is in a book, folks, but you've just heard it told by the great Tanya.
Yeah, I kind of did the spoiler thing, didn't I?
No. That was great. That's absolutely great. So the book's illustrated by Bruce Potter.
Mm-hmm.
He's a South Island illustrator. Is that right?
He's a New Zealand illustrator who's based down in Otago. And Bruce has quite an impressive history as a children's illustrator, award-winning children's illustrator here in New Zealand. He's a very interesting character. I do know Bruce. I haven't seen him for several years, but he's also an amazing singer. He's got an operatic background.
Wow.
And also is a kind of a martial arts expert. So it's an interesting combination of things.
Precise.
Yes. Yes, precise. That's right. Yes, there you are. That's
in
right.
In a timely way.
Yes, yeah.
It's a really lovely looking book. Radio is not the best for showing pictures, but maybe...
Oh, but radio has the best pictures.
Not radio has the best pictures because they're in your head. Yeah. But it's a really lovely looking book. And
that's all credit to One Tree House.
What a great publisher.
Well, they've got an interesting story too. They're a relatively new New Zealand children's publisher, and there aren't actually very many New Zealand publishers.
Not at all.
Because, you know, we're, you know, a small population, and to actually be able to make things work financially, it's kind of a challenge.
The market, though, is global for New Zealand writers.
That's right.
If we get it right.
Of course.
I just think of Margaret Mahe. She was never restricted by a small market.
No, that's right. And that's really what you have to look at. You see ourselves as global citizens, really.
Yeah, with a message for everyone. I mean, Margaret Mahe's books may have been set in Katangata and places like that, but they're totally universal, wonderful books.
Good story always speaks beyond its immediate, its location.
And this is a good story, Tanya. This is a really good story.
Well, it's for me a really important story, and it's kind of interesting to talk a little bit to how it came about. It came when some of you may remember the Story Centre, our beautiful library that we now have.
Yep.
And when the Story Centre was in operation, we ran workshops.
In the old artworks.
Yes, in the old days, in a different time.
I remember when
Waikiki
smelt different.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, even I've been thinking about this, once upon a time, you know, Stephen Fry talks about this, you know, for storytelling, is that the story can't exist without time.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. It can't exist in that vacuum. But I ran a philosophy course based on the work of, now I brought them in here because I just knew I would forget, two Australians, Lawrence Splitter and Tim Sprod. And they created a series of resources to encourage philosophical thinking in
children.
Famous
philosophers, Splitter and Sprod.
Splitter and Sprog. That's right. It's a great duo name, isn't it? Splitter and Sprog. And it was as a result of running this workshop with children where we were asking these, you know, encouraging philosophical inquiry beyond the kind of just getting the right answer, but kind of thinking deeply about what, you know, was life all about, that I went home one evening and created this story. And it started its life in terms of being told, because it was obviously that's what I do, I tell stories. And it was part of an album that was created, funded by Creative New Zealand, that I put out on my 40th birthday of original stories. Now, mostly I do retellings of traditional stories.
Yeah.
And I love traditional stories. There's a lot of wisdom of them. Mm. Otherwise,
they last a long time.
For a reason. That's right.
They're retellable in a million different contexts.
That's it. So that's how it started. It started as a told story in response to this philosophical course with children, and then it was picked up by Christine Dale and Jenny Nagel, who are the directors.
Who are One Tree.
One Tree Publishing, yep. One Tree House Publishing. So that's its little story about how it came to be in the earth. And now, of course, as in its new story form as a book,
yeah,
it's about to launch out into the world, really.
Hoping to get it translated. I think it's got potential.
You don't know, you know. I'd
you
like to
know,
think that it has some longevity because, you know, a lot of effort, a lot of trees have gone into kind of creating
this. But it's also the nature of the story, isn't it? It's so...
timeless.
And so the launch is in a few days. It's not on the island, though. It's over probably,
across
Time Out or something? Time Out Bookshop in Mount Eden.
Just because you could have a launch of the time of your life.
At Time Out.
At Time Out. I just felt that was an opportunity too good to miss. But it is my intention to do some celebration and some workshopping with the community and the children on the island at some later stage.
For you, just before we finish, number what book?
Sounds kind of a bit vague.
But it also sounds like all you do is write books.
I know.
When in fact you're much larger work, if you like, is oral storytelling.
It is. And pretty much all my writing has come from my storytelling, which is kind of how...
So how many books?
because it sounds better to have to think about it, doesn't it? But I don't know. It must be like, I must have written maybe 11, 12, 13
Wonderful.
Books, something like that now.
Something like that. Who's counting?
Who's counting
time? Tanya Batt, it's been so lovely to have you here in the studio. And thank you for your time.